My name is Richard Rose. I appear on behalf of the appellant, the plaintiff below, U.S. Facts Law Center, Inc. As the court knows, this case arises from the alleged transmission of approximately 17 unsolicited facsimile advertisements between 2005 and 2007. They were transmissions from the defendants to plaintiff's assignor, Olshan Foundation Repair. The plaintiff filed this complaint in district court asserting federal claims under the Telephone Consumer Protection Act junk fax provisions, under the Colorado Consumer Protection Act junk fax provisions, as well as a common law count for negligence and negligence per se. We've addressed approximately five issues in our briefs. Because of the brief time we have with you here today, we would choose to address the first three of those issues unless the court has questions on the last two. Those primary issues I'd like to address are, one, whether the trial court's award of attorney's fees pursuant to 1317-201 for dismissal of the plaintiff's federal TCPA fax claim violates the Supremacy Clause. Two, whether the trial court erred by granting an award of attorney's fees for dismissal of the plaintiff's TCPA junk fax claim under 1317-201 if 1317-201 only applies to state tort actions. Three, whether the trial court erred by awarding attorney's fees for dismissal of the state CCPA claim. That award was pursuant to 1317-201, and appellant contends because the CCPA has its own attorney's fees provision, 611.13.3, the trial court could only look to that provision. Turning to the issues for to the issue on preemption dealing with the Supremacy Clause, it is appellant's position that because the TCPA is subject to the common law American rule, the trial court's award of attorney's fees for dismissal of the federal junk fax claim pursuant to 1317-201 violates the Supremacy Clause. The TCPA private right of action provides a very clear statutory scheme and very clear statutory remedies. They include remedies for injunctive relief, actual damages, statutory liquidated damages, treble damages awarded within the trial court's discretion, but it does not provide for the award of attorney's fees. Congress's silence regarding an award of attorney's fees reflects Congress's intent for the TCPA to be subject to the American rule. The American rule states that each party in a lawsuit is required to bear its own legal expenses in the absence of an express statute, court rule, or a contract to the contrary.
Mr. Rose, what do you make of the TCPA language that, first of all, requires these cases to be brought in state court? That seems to be a decided point. It says that the cases shall be brought in state court if otherwise permitted by the laws or rules of the state court. Do those laws or rules of the state court include, don't they include things like attorney's fees provision? Certainly they include the civil rules of civil procedure, I assume, to a degree.
Your Honor, it's the appellant's position that they do not include attorney's fees provisions. And if it was the intent of Congress to include those under the American rule, Congress would have so stated. It is our position, as reflected by the statutory history of the TCPA, that the statutory section Your Honor is referring to was a direction to the states that the states were to try these cases, but the states were not required to enact rules and or statutes or courts to facilitate the trial of these cases. That the states could use the court rules that it had in place and the court structure, the judicial structure within a state to try these cases, and did not have to create anything special.
Doesn't that include the attorney's fee statute?
No, it doesn't, Your Honor. And if Congress had wanted it to, it would have said so. And it certainly did not. There's another section as well, Your Honor, in the statute which suggests that the TCPA does not preempt state law, but that section specifically refers to the regulatory scheme, that states could regulate the dissemination of junk faxes more strictly than the federal statute, but it makes no reference to an award of attorney's fees.
Have you examined the federal legislative history for any reference one way or the other to state attorney fee provisions?
We have, Your Honor, and as best I can recall, there is no reference to an award of attorney's fees. There was no contemplation of an award of attorney's fees in the TCPA legislative history.
Thank you.
Because Congress was silent as to the issue of attorney's fees, the American rule, as adopted by the United States Supreme Court in a number of cases, including the Keytronic case, the Alyeska pipeline case cited in our briefs, dictates that attorney's fees generally are not a recoverable cost of litigation absent explicit congressional authorization. And, Your Honor, Judge Furman, that goes back to your question. There was no explicit congressional authorization for an award of attorney's fees in the section that you are referring to.
Any cases that so hold that the TCPA does not permit attorney's fees to be awarded in state courts? Where do state courts have statutes that allow it?
There are, as I recall, there are a couple of references to the fact that attorney's fees are not awardable in TCPA claims, but I don't recall that those cases specifically were addressing the issue of a state statute allowing attorney's fees. It was more addressing the issue of the fact that the TCPA itself does not authorize an award of attorney's fees.
Let me broaden the question. Any cases that say where Congress is silent, the state attorney fee statutes can't be applied?
There are cases. There's a case cited by the appellee in their reply or their supplemental reply, which was filed, I believe, last week. It's a decision out of Florida. It's Talbert versus American Isuzu Motors, but it wasn't dealing with TCPA claims.
Right.
It was dealing with a claim under the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act.
And it allowed attorney's fees.
It allowed attorney's fees, indeed.
In the face of congressional silence.
In the face of congressional silence. And we would suggest to Your Honor, with all due respect to that court, that that decision is wrongly decided for the reasons stated in the dissent. Because what we now have are state courts again trying to carve out exceptions to the American rule that has existed at the federal level for hundreds of years, and here in Colorado for, I won't say hundreds, but at least 100 years, 100. I believe. Because an award of attorney's fees under 1317-201 conflicts with congressional intent under the TCPA as evidenced by Congress's silence, the trial court's award of attorney's fees violates the Supremacy Clause. Based upon principles of implicit preemption, it was error for the trial court to award attorney's fees based upon the dismissal of the TCPA federal claim pursuant to 1317-201. Similarly, 1317-201 only applies to state court actions. That was recognized by this court in Kennedy versus King Soopers, which I believe Judge Furman participated in. In that case, the court had two holdings significant to this case. One, the court said that it doesn't matter how the complaint could have been framed or should have been framed. In determining whether or not 1317-201 applies in a case, the court will look at how the complaint or the claims were alleged by the plaintiff. And in this case, it is clear that the plaintiff has alleged the statutory federal claim, the statutory state claim for liquidated damages, and then as a third claim, a claim for negligence and negligence per se.
At least two or three of your claims are state statutory claims, are they not?
At least there is certainly a CCPA statutory claim, and then arguably a negligence per se claim based upon the CCPA.
So three or four claims appear to be state, as you use the phrase, state statutory claims.
Correct.
Tort claims, excuse me.
Well, statutory claims.
And negligence and negligence per se are torts, you agree?
That's correct.
All right. So what do you say about this Dubray case that was decided after you filed your opening brief but was cited by the appellees in their response brief and was not referred to in your reply brief? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
In Dubray, the court awarded attorney's fees someone facing argument like this by finding that 8 of the 10 claims were state statute, were tort claims. And under that allocation, it found that the fees could be awarded under 1317-201.
Well, Your Honor, we would argue that it's not so much tallying up the claims, but what is the predominating claim? And the predominating claim in the complaint are statutory claims for liquidated damages. And those claims can only be brought under the CCPA and the TCPA. And the damages sought in the complaint sought statutory damages, liquidated damages of $500 each, plus attorney's fees in the appropriate context and costs. With the court's permission, I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Okay.
May it please the court, I'm Eliza Getches. I'm appearing on behalf of Henry Schein, Incorporated. I'm going to address and respond to the appellant's arguments, and if there's time or if Your Honors have any questions with respect to the remaining issues on appeal, I'll be happy to address those. The district court's award of attorney's fees under the mandatory fee statute is permitted by the Supremacy Clause, by the mandatory fee statute, and by the Colorado Consumer Protection Act. I will address why the mandatory fee statute does not conflict with any of those statutes in turn. The mandatory fee statute is not preempted by the Telephone Consumer Protection Act. A preemption analysis begins with the presumption that Congress did not intend to displace state law. Despite that presumption, the appellant submits that the American rule means that when Congress is silent in enacting a statute, that it intends to adopt the American rule and preempt any state statute that allows for the recovery of attorney's fees. Appellant misinterprets the American rule. The American rule provides that attorney's fees are not recoverable unless there is a specific statute or a contract which provides otherwise. The proper analysis is that the American rule is not an absolute bar to the recovery of attorney's fees. And the American rule also holds that Congress's silence, if Congress is silent in enacting a federal statute, then it leaves open the door for another state statute to allow for the recovery of attorney's fees. The Talbot versus American Isuzu case, which Your Honor asked about, express the holding that the American rule leaves open the possibility for a state statute to award attorney's fees. Here, the TCPA does not expressly authorize the award of attorney's fees. By remaining silent, Congress left open the possibility that defendants could be awarded attorney's fees under another statute. The mandatory fee statute is that very statute. It provides that defendants shall be awarded their attorney's fees upon successfully dismissing a Rule 12b motion, a case on a Rule 12b motion. Taking appellant's position to the logical extreme, every state statute that provides for the awards of attorney's fees would be preempted by any federal statute that is silent on the issue of attorney's fees. That would render meaningless any state statute that awards attorney's fees, including the mandatory fee statute and any frivolous and groundless state statute which allows for the recovery of attorney's fees. This result would be in direct conflict with this court's opinion in Consumer Crusade versus Clarion. In that case, which was a TCPA case, this court awarded attorney's fees under Colorado's mandatory fee statute.
But preemption was not argued in that case.
That is correct, but it was a TCPA case, right, and a frivolous and groundless claim, and attorney's fees were awarded.
I'm familiar with it.
Okay. The cases relied upon by appellant do not support its position that an award of attorney's fees under the mandatory fee statute conflicts with the TCPA. State versus Golden Concrete is distinguishable. In that case, the mandatory fee statute was preempted by 42 U.S.C. 1988, but that federal statute only allows for the award of attorney's fees if the suit is vexatious or brought for the purposes of harassment. So congressional silence on the issue of attorney's fees distinguishes it from other federal statutes like 42 U.S.C. 1988, which allow for the recovery of attorney's fees.
As long as you're on that subject, tell us why the CCPA attorney fee provision doesn't conflict with 201, as appellants argue but haven't really addressed yet.
Okay. The reason that the CCPA does not conflict with the mandatory fee statute, the fee provision in the CCPA, there's two reasons. From a factual standpoint, we didn't assert that the appellant's claims were frivolous or groundless and brought in bad faith. And then from a legal standpoint, they don't conflict because they can be simultaneously applied. Both cases are sought to discourage unnecessary tort claims. One is to discourage groundless CCPA claims. The other is to discourage unnecessary tort claims.
Here's my point. Yeah. Golden Concrete recognizes or holds that 1988 is in conflict with the 201 statute, right?
Correct.
Because it only allows fees if it's vexatious or frivolous case. The CCPA statute says attorney's fees are awarded if the case is, I don't know the exact words, but vexatious or brought in bad faith. Why isn't it the same analysis? If Golden Concrete says 1988 makes 201 unenforceable, why are the appellants wrong in saying that the CCPA attorney's fee provision renders 201 unenforceable?
Because 42 U.S.C. 1988 limited the circumstances for recovering attorney's fees to only when the case is vexatious and brought in bad faith. And the CCPA, by contrast, says that the trial court has the discretion to award attorney's fees if the case is found to be groundless and in bad faith. So the federal statute carved out a limited exception for the recovery of attorney's fees, and the CCPA said one instance you can recover attorney's fees is if it's brought in bad faith.
Isn't it exactly the opposite? Doesn't the CCPA statute say this court shall award attorney's fees if it's vexatious or brought in bad faith?
No.
Whereas the federal statute says they may award attorney's fees if it's brought in bad faith?
No, Your Honor, I think it's actually the opposite. It's that the federal statute can only be awarded in certain circumstances, and the CCPA, the trial court, has discretion to award attorney's fees if it finds that they're groundless and brought in bad faith. The other case relied upon by the appellant in with respect to its preemption argument is Klein versus Vision Lab. That case actually supports Henry Schein's position because the court made a statement in that case that other state courts have awarded attorney's fees in TCPA cases where pursuant to specific state authorizations, attorney's fees are recoverable. Although I don't have any cases and that case did not cite to those specific cases, it at least is an acknowledgement of our position. Appellant's next argument that the mandatory fee statute does not apply where the dismissal includes a federal tort claim also does not have merit. Their argument is wrong for three reasons. The first reason is that the plain language of the mandatory fee statute applies to all tort actions that are dismissed. It makes no distinction between federal and tort claims, and instead it mandates that a defendant shall recover its attorney's fees in any tort action.
What do you make of that language in Kennedy, where they refer to state tort actions?
I think Kennedy is distinguishable. The court's statement in that case was limited to the facts of that case. The court was declining to address the plaintiff's argument that the mandatory fee statute was preempted by the federal collective bargaining statutes. And in declining to determine whether there was a preemption, it said it found that in that case, because plaintiff had not pled any claim under the federal statute, the dismissal of the plaintiff's case applied only to a state court action. And I think the statement is limited to the facts of that case. Even if in Kennedy that the statement that the mandatory fee statute applies only to state court actions, I think it would support affirmance in this case, because the dismissal by the district court in this case was of a state court action.
State tort action.
Correct.
Okay, you're saying court or tort. I'm having trouble hearing.
I'm sorry.
I mean court, but I think you mean tort.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm probably mumbling. What I was trying to say is that The appellant brought a case in state court asserting several state tort claims and one federal tort claim. And the holding in Kennedy was that the mandatory fee statute applies only, or the statement in Kennedy was that it only applies to state court actions. And I would submit that there's no case law that holds that a case that includes one federal claim is no longer a state tort action. And I think Dubray versus Intertribal Bison, referred to by Your Honor, and Work versus Board of Education also support this point, that the gravamen of the complaint should be looked to determine what kind of action it is. Just to finish up on your question regarding the Consumer Protection Act and whether it conflicts with the mandatory fee statute, Hoduck, cited by appellant, I believe is distinguishable. In Hoduck, the statute that was at issue was 1317-102, which prohibits an award of attorney's fees if the case is brought in a good faith attempt to establish new law. And that statute was found to conflict with the mandatory fee statute because there was no express exclusion under the mandatory fee statute for cases that are brought in good faith. Here, the mandatory fee statute and the Consumer Protection Act do not conflict, the fee provisions do not conflict, because it is possible for a court to both dismiss a case for being groundless and brought in bad faith and to award attorney's fees under the mandatory fee statute. So one statute does not work to the exclusion of the other. In conclusion, I would just ask that Henry Schein, that the trial court be awarded its fees on appeal, and that the this court affirm the district court.
Question about the timeliness of your fee application. It came in following lapse of the 15 days, correct?
Correct.
Did you seek an extension of the time to file the fee application before the 15-day deadline had lapsed, as would be contemplated by Rule 6B?
We conferred with opposing counsel. We were in the process of determining whether settlement was appropriate. They had noticed that we were going to file a fee application. We did not file a motion for attorney's fees. But I think there is Colorado authority that a motion for attorney's fees can be granted without an extension. I believe Rule 121 says that the court may entertain a request for fees in greater time allowed by the court.
Okay, but you didn't ask for an extension to file the fee application before the 15 days lapsed.
From the court, we did not move for an extension.
Thank you.
Judge Webb, to address the last issue you were just addressing, as counsel has conceded, the defendants did not file a motion for enlargement of time. Rule 121 needs to be read in conjunction with Rule 6, and although the court under Rule 21 has the discretion to allow an untimely application for fees, it would appear under Rule 6 that first a motion for enlargement of time made out of time has to be submitted and must demonstrate excusable neglect for the untimely request for additional time. And that simply was not done. So even though the district court had discretion, it would have to exercise that discretion within the requirements of Rule 6 that excusable neglect be alleged in an appropriate motion and demonstrated factually, and that did not happen in this case.
No such allegation?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
There was a finding by the trial court that explained why she allowed the motion to be filed out of time, was there not?
There was a reference to the defendant's reply regarding attorney's fees, yes. However, Rule 6 was simply not complied with. I assume this court and every district court wants to encourage the parties to try to explore settlement. But at the same time, that doesn't mean the parties can are excused from having to require to comply with the deadlines provided by the rules. And in the absence of compliance, an appropriate motion should have been filed and was not. Getting back to the issue of attorney's fees, whether attorney's fees under 1317-201 can be awarded based upon a dismissal of the CCPA claim, I would point out to the court that the CCPA contains its own attorney's fees provision, and that at 6.1.113(3) says any person who brings an action under this article that is found by the court to be groundless and in bad faith or for the purpose of harassment shall be liable to the defendant for the costs of the action together with reasonable attorney's fees. That language is similar to 1317-102. So the question is, if that type of policing mechanism already exists in 1317-102, why then did the legislature put it into 6.1.113(3)? And it would be our contention that the reason the legislature did that was to limit the grounds or basis on which a prevailing defendant can receive fees upon a dismissal of a CCPA claim.
Are you suggesting that that 6.1.113(3) is the only provision under which attorney's fees can be awarded in connection with the CCPA claim?
That's contained within the CCPA, yes, Your Honor. Certainly Rule 11 sanctions could apply. But the and, legislature
and the substance the frivolous and groundless statute could apply.
Well, that is a good question, and to that I would respond, Your Honor, that the frivolous and groundless statute is a statute that has been enacted as recognized in Talbot to essentially give the courts a mechanism to police proceedings in front of the court, so that litigants and attorneys are not abusive in the conduct of litigation.
And what is 201?
201 is a strict liability. 201 or
the statute.
201 is essentially a strict liability statute. It does not call into question the merits of the claim. Mm-hmm. It does not call into question whether or not a litigant is trying to argue a good faith change in Colorado law. Those are all ruled out. It's a strict liability claim.
And so the only difference between the reason 201 cannot be applied here, but the other statutes, Rule 11 or 102, could be applied is because the other ones give discretion to the judge, but 201 doesn't give discretion?
Right.
I'm having trouble distinguishing why your argument wouldn't preempt all Colorado attorney fee statutes from applying the CCPA claim.
Well, it would not preempt all because the CCPA itself provides for an award of attorney's fees.
Only on the grounds that are in the statute, though.
And they serve different functions, Your Honor. 201, as I said, is a strict liability statute. It has no bearing upon good faith of the litigants. Mm-hmm. It has no bearing upon harassment, whether or not claims are alleged with a factual or legal basis. It's just if they're dismissed under Rule 12b, attorney's fees are mandatory. Whereas 102 and 6.1.113 mm-hmm. clearly vest discretion with the courts.
So they're two different situations?
Yes.
Okay.
And under HUDEC, even, well, I see my time is up.
Your time is up. Let me ask you one question and hopefully get a very crisp answer. Let's assume we agree with you as to the CCPA claim. Would we then remand and direct the trial court to attempt to make some apportionment of the fees that were allocable to the other claims for purposes of fee shifting, but not allow fee shifting for fees that are allocable to the briefing and arguments on the CCPA claim?
That certainly would be within the court's authority. It would be the appellant's position, though, that as a matter of proof, the defendants failed at the trial court level in their burden of proof in not presenting evidence that would allow such an allocation. And the only thing the court could do in light of that is either remand with directions that the motion for attorney's fees be denied, or remand with the direction that the district court conduct an additional evidentiary hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We appreciate the argument.